You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where my brain is too full of football to come up with a witty opening. If you enjoy your trip here, please tell a friend. As always, referrals are our number one source of tourism. And if you enjoy us as your tour guides, please tip us via Patreon, patreon.com/themidside. Also joining us as tour guides this week, this trip, via Skype from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards. Daniel, is Labor Day the worst name holiday ever?
Like, worst named federal holiday or any holiday? Because there are some doozies.
Well, there are a lot of holidays if we count any holiday, because social media people have made every day a holiday to have something to post about.
Okay, well, those are like third tier bottom of the caste system holidays. I'm talking at least second tier holidays. Like, okay. Arbor Day is a really shitty named holiday because no one knows what an arbor is.
It's a tree.
Yes, indeed, but you're 30 something, so you would know. But one we have in Illinois, mostly in the Chicago area, is Casimir Pulaski Day. That's right, Pole Day.
Yeah, sounds good to me.
We eat kielbasa and celebrate a Polish cavalry that inspired the American cavalry in the Revolution.
Wait, that's not every day?
No. No, it turns out we're not petting horses and eating sausages on a daily basis here.
Oh, that's how I grew up.
Fingers. You didn't celebrate Casimir Pulaski Day in the Northeast? A lot of Poles there.
No. We're like third-class citizens in the Northeast. This is why I get mad about white privilege shit, man. Like, Polish people were made fun of for being dumb. Like, it's a big deal that Gronkowski and Gostkowski are on the Patriots. That's like a big win for us.
not related.
I'm not even kidding. My dad was like, when I was a kid, we never saw any Polish people. Now we got Gronkowski and Gostkowski on the back of the Patriots jerseys. Polish lives matter.
How far they've fallen.
How far who has fallen?
The great nation of Poland. Once a world power. Now.
They were?
Europe's bitch.
See? Even the Puerto Ricans are disrespecting us. Also joining us as your tour guide via Skype from the House of Mouse, Elliot Rivera. Welcome back, Elliot. It feels like you haven't been in the midside in a while.
I haven't been. For those of you that didn't know, I had to miss a couple of weeks ago because everybody at my job decided to call in and they had to keep me longer than I wanted to. And yeah, that was a bad week. I literally had to, like, I literally did not leave work. I would go in at 9 in the morning and not leave until 10 in the evening for a few days that week. It was a bad week. Very happy to have today off.
Well, I bet I know what you did on your way back from work that day. I bet you abused your Lyft driver. So you probably want to hear about this first news story. Let's get into it in the news with Daniel T. Richards.
It really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals. This isn't just a fad.
Malo, no. Social justice warrior abuses her Lyft driver over an offensive hula girl bobblehead, according to Heat Street and numerous other sites. This was my favorite story of the week because it has farce, social justice, feminism, and Uber. Or I guess Lyft, technically. So, rideshare. Shiloh. This is from the story.
Is this our most millennial story ever?
It's pretty close. This and the girl who tried to murder her mother over not getting an iPhone.
Yeah, but she at least knew what bleach was and knew how to, like, poison someone with bleach. I feel like most millennials wouldn't know that.
It's true. Yeah, I don't know. So this apparently a quote-unquote drunk turbo feminist that a thing?
Is that like after you've like done a certain amount of social justice combos, you become a turbo feminist? And yes, if Milo Yiannopoulos shows up, is that a combo breaker?
Yeah. He was on. He was interviewed for some horrible television show recently, right? And they tried to make fun of him.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. That interview was really poorly produced. And also, he looked like he just woke up, rolled out of bed, and went on the show like he didn't give a shit. Like, one of his eyes looked like he had been punched or something. Did you notice that in the interview?
Yeah.
It was bizarre. The whole thing was bizarre. Like, the host called him an idiot, the interviewer, the reporter.
I know. Anyway. All right. Anyway, back to this idiot. A turbo feminist entered a Lyft car, and instead of quietly enjoying her ride, she decided it was best to berate the driver for 5 minutes over a hula girl bobblehead sitting on the dashboard. She said to him, quote, "You thought that was adorable. You didn't think of the pillaging of, like, the continent of Hawaii."
Wait, she said continent?
Continent she of said Hawaii.
Continent of Hawaii. So the Lyft driver had to endure this berating, all the while this social justice warrior, who has been since identified as Annalise Nielsen, the owner of a high-profile LA-based digital girls club, and put in parentheses, because I didn't know what that was, so thank you, Heat Street. They clarify it's a online sorority for rich, annoying people. So it's like
that's what Vox was.
Oh, so many examples. You went one way, I went the other. But she filmed the thing, but I don't know how it ended up with a journalist, but it did, and it was posted on YouTube. The girl went on, by the way. This is my favorite line. She tells the driver, "You'll be published on Gawker."
Wow. That's like as millennial as it gets.
Timely. Timely, Annalise.
Well, this happened like a year ago, didn't it?
I don't know. I don't have the date on here.
Oh, I read her Facebook post. She has like a Facebook post about it, about how to properly respond to it. And she says it happened a year ago and people are digging it up now, and that she hopes everyone who knows her and is upset by it just ignores it, because it's obviously people just trying to be trolls and get attention.
You mean like she was doing?
No, she thinks she was in the right. Still.
Really?
That's the scary thing about these people.
You have a year to reflect and you still think you're going to berate the Lyft driver over the plastic dancing hula girl?
That is an appropriation of Hawaiian culture. That and fat offensive lineman comes from Hawaii. Every team that is not located in Hawaii should not have fat offensive linemen.
It's true. But they have the best cankles. They really do. I hate to see what she says to a guy who has one of those fucking tree air fresheners. What are you, fucking Pope Francis hater? That's foreshadowing to a later story. That's foreshadowing.
Way to hang a lantern on that one. Well, what about me? I have a little figure of Iron Man holding a Patriots helmet.
Oh, God. You are a white male oppressor. You would never hear the end of it.
Is that geek face?
Oh, geez.
The fact that I would have a geek icon hold a football helmet, is that geek face? Because I'm appropriating nerd culture for jocktum?
Exactly. Fucking pick an identity. You can be a geek or a jock. You can't be a jock.
My question is this, though. What is a turbo feminist? Do we really want to know? It conjures this like Marvel, DC kind of like creation.
Oh, like I was thinking of the movie Turbo, where Ryan Reynolds voiced the really fast snail. I feel like this is the spinoff, Turbo Feminist.
I thought her body was rigged such that her exhaust fueled a piston, thus made her go faster.
She gets offended quicker?
Yes.
But, indeed. I mean, here's the question, though. Where is the line with this shit? I mean, I was kind of mockingly saying that with the Iron Man Patriots helmet thing, but where is the line of what you're allowed to put there and what you're not? And also, the other side of this is just basic decency. Like, you are paying for this ride, but does that give you the right to just berate the driver and everything and he has to accept it? Like, what if she gave him a one-star review on Lyft for this?
True. I mean, I think Lyft drivers or Uber drivers could complain to their company that the review is for specious reasons, and that would probably be looked into. But you're right. We are getting into a culture now where we take our virtue signaling very seriously, and we have to virtue signal even in the confines of a one-on-one conversation for a service that you're paying for. Calm it down a bit. But there is no line, Justin. It's a myth that there is a line. Not saying that you're perpetuating it, but the left has no line. They will use anything, any context, as long as they can use it as a club to bring you down, to make themselves or someone else a victim. Because when they can become the victim, that it's an instant shield against all critique, all attack, all quote-unquote power. So there is no line. They will move the line as they see fit.
Daniel, my question is this, though. Legally, I mean, because if she recorded the conversation, presumably without the driver's knowledge, could she face any kind of legal repercussions for this?
Let me consult my vast legal knowledge. Elliot. It would depend on the state, actually. So some states have laws against recording without permission. Some states don't.
I think California is a consent, two-party consent state, right? So I kind of
if I had to guess,
yeah. You need explicit consent, signed,
signed, mm-hmm. sealed, delivered.
Yes.
She could be in some amount of trouble, even though I'm still curious how this video actually got uploaded to YouTube. But
can you be banned from Lyft or Uber? Can they be like not allowed to use our app anymore? Okay, I think this is a bannable offense. If I were in charge of this company, I would ban the user over this.
Yeah, me too. Well, you know what Clemson has decided to do is apparently ban people from praying on campus. At least that's what the conservative social justice warriors would have you believe. That's right. Clemson man stopped from praying on campus, told this is not a free speech area. Red alert, politics. I'm gonna give you some background on this story, then I think we're gonna have varying degrees of analysis on this story, I suspect. But first, the background. Clemson administrator stopped a man from praying on campus, telling him and a Young Americans for Freedom activist that the area was not a designated free speech area, and that they had to leave. The administrator also called their praying solicitation and demanded that they would need to fill out paper to continue. Federal funding, and many see these restrictions as disregarding the amendment to the Constitution by limiting free speech to certain zones.
Wait, I have to stop you for a second.
Actually, ask the administrator.
Hold on, I have to stop you for a second and go Adam Carolla here. Elliot, are you cutting your fingernails?
No, why? What are you hearing?
It sounds like every 5 seconds somebody's cutting their fingernails. I feel like Adam Carolla when Dr. Drew keeps hitting his coffee cup on the table. Is nobody else hearing that?
No, that's weird. No.
It's like a snapping every 5 seconds.
Nah, man. Sorry, I don't know.
All right,
well,
someone in the audience back me up. Motive Power, you heard that, right? I want like three images tweeted at me that somehow represent me hearing the snap and nobody else hearing it.
That's right.
It's like NSA listening in. That's all it is.
Maybe it was a wiretap.
Patching in. Can we get on with the conservative social justice?
Yeah, go on to our master's alma mater, our grad school alma mater.
That's right. The Young Americans for Freedom member actually asked the administrator, do you mean that there are areas on campus and that the entire campus is not a free speech area? And the administrator replied, that is correct. So, before we get into the official Clemson response to this, any initial thoughts? Because the story as it's presented certainly doesn't look good for Clemson in this Red Alert article. Were you suspicious of this article?
Well, yeah, anytime anyone's outraged nowadays, I'm suspicious.
Yeah, definitely. I was suspicious too.
I mean, here's the thing that this is what really was sort of set off my warning bells. Who needs to pray on campus while having a sign that says praying? Like, that's the thing that's really sketchy about it. Like, okay, pray wherever you want, but you're making it a public event, and you're making it a I can't think of another word right now, but
like an assembly?
Yeah, like an assembly, like a gathering when you put the word praying there. It's no longer like, hey, I'm praying. Nobody's going to come up to you if you're praying and be like, hey, stop fucking praying. Even if you're Muslim and you whip out a rug and point yourself in the direction, nobody, well, maybe in Clemson, I don't know, but nobody's going to stop you. But the fact that you had to have a sign that says praying, like, if I had a sign that said eating and I was sitting on that, what's the main street where they have that giant field?
Giant field street?
No, you know what I mean, where it goes into the little downtown of five bars.
This was 2009, the last time I was there. You think I remember the street names?
We just lost all credibility as Clemson alumni.
I barely remember that I went there.
Just lost all credibility. But no, I have a feeling if I sat on that field and had a sign that said eating, they would come up to me and be like, take away that sign. Because why do I need to draw attention to myself? If you really need attention that badly for praying, put it on Snapchat. That's what Snapchat's for. That and your dick. So snap a picture of you praying and then snap a picture of your dick and you have succeeded at Snapchat.
God and penis. That's why they made Snapchat. God and penis.
Now that is a podcast meme if I ever heard one. God and penis.
So Clemson, of course, released a statement which makes total, complete fucking sense. And this is coming from someone who thinks Clemson has gone off the deep end a little bit in terms of its free speech stuff. But so it starts, over the past several days, the university's position regarding free speech, specifically prayer on campus, has been misrepresented by certain groups and individuals. And then they go on to explain they completely support and do not prohibit anywhere on campus students, faculty, and staff of all religious faiths to express their beliefs on campus. Religious expression occurs regularly at Clemson, including the many religious student-based organizations. And here's where the clarification comes in, which wasn't in the original Red Alert article. Individuals and groups from the external community are welcome to pray on campus, either individually or while interacting with students, but they have a right to protect their students from people who are not faculty, staff, etc., by asking them what they're doing, why they're there, if they have a permit. And they point out exactly what you point out, Justin, which is, look, if you're going to have a sign to pray with you, then you are starting an assembly. And you, as a non-Clemson student, don't necessarily have the right, public university, you don't have the right to just start an assembly on campus without a specific permit. So, and this is where we get into it. Constitutional law does not make all areas of the Clemson campus open to the public. Clemson has the right and legal obligation to govern the use of its facilities and space to ensure safety and to facilitate an effective learning environment. Groups and persons not affiliated with the university or desire to hold events may do so, but they must have permission. And then it gets even further, which I think is the important part here, which is they're saying it doesn't matter what the content. We don't care what the content is. It's the activity. You can't just have any activity you want anywhere on campus at any time if you're a member of the public and you're not a student, faculty, or staff. Is that not overly reasonable? I think that's just common sense.
It's completely reasonable, and it raises an important point.
Thoughts?
If you are in Clemson and not a student, how little do you have to have going on in your life to be on Clemson's campus trying to start an assembly for prayer or for anything for that matter? Just fucking move if you want more attention. It's Clemson.
It's true. The thing I do remember about Clemson is that there were quite a few townies.
Yeah, which I don't
understand.
Because
the university more than doubles the population when it's in session.
That's true. And during football weekends, it more than like, what's eight? Octuples?
Yeah. Well, like the town of Clemson's 12,000 or 11,000. The student body plus faculty staff is 30,000. And then they sell out every football weekend their stadium, which seats like 80,000 people in it.
Right. And then there are like 120 in the town just because people show up just to tailgate.
Indeed. So there are going to be a lot of townies around, and if Clemson just said, yeah, have free reign willy-nilly, no matter who you are, where you come from, what you do, do anything you want on campus, it would be a goddamn nightmare.
Like it is on game day.
Exactly.
Where they do that because there's too many people and it's just chaos.
This is, okay, This is a non-issue, right? I think we can agree this is a non-issue.
It's an issue of bread?
Yes. Hilarious. This is an example of the right trying to use the tactics of the left, trying to make themselves into victims when they're clearly not victims. Why does the right think that it had to use this tactic in order to convince anyone?
Because it comes from that Coulter school, you know, that you should do the idea that you should do whatever the left does, you know, that it's treating them with their own medicine kind of thing. And the truth of the matter is I highly doubt its efficacy. This idea that, well, we should just do whatever they do. Well, no, we can't, because it's not the action. It's the principles that undergird what the left does. They lie, they obfuscate, they complain, they whine because morally and philosophically they have accepted certain ideas and certain premises that the rest of us have not. And if you are a conservative or anybody leaning on the right and your impulse is to just strike back at them to do whatever they've done in an attempt to hurt them, then you need to question what philosophy you are operating on and what ideas you've accepted to be true.
Hear, hear. Justin, anything to add?
I just think it's because they have a lack of tactics of their own. I mean, disregarding the whole religious thing, what has the right's tactic ever been for forwarding their ideas? Have they ever had anything?
We want to... whatever the left wants.
Exactly. Being anti-left does not make you pro-liberty. It does not make you pro-individual rights. It just makes you anti-left. And it's high time that people realize that.
Right. But that's not even a tactic either. That's just a stance. Hey, I'm anti-left, which is great. Like, I'm glad you have a stance, but say what you will about the left, but Saul Alinsky actually gave them fucking tactics to use and things to do. I mean, this is why Donald Trump has been so successful.
Successful, yes, indeed. Alinsky's tactics, plus the principle of the left, the consistent principle of the left, altruism, self-sacrifice, etc., makes them very effective. The right doesn't have anything like that. The right tries to be principled, but it has competing principles, and its principles ultimately are just an offshoot of the principles of the left, just a watered-down version.
Right, ultimately because of the religious element of self-sacrifice, you know, through Christianity and the idea of living like Jesus Christ, it becomes that way. Because as you pointed out, they have those what? Did I step on your transition?
I was thinking of the next story. No. You are making the transition for me. Okay, now I'm making it awkward because I'm pointing out that you're making the transition.
Yeah, you're hanging a lot of lanterns today.
I'm hanging a lantern and you're hanging lantern. Stop saying hanging a lantern.
No,
I want to watch the movie Tangled. Golly.
What does the movie Tangled have to do with hanging a lantern?
The Chinese lanterns that they send in the air. Looking for the... Oh my gosh.
To be fair, I haven't seen Tangled. All right, just do the next fucking story. I forgot what I was going to say.
Catholics! Catholics are obligated to take care of the planet just like they take care of the sick. At least according to the Pope. And Pope Francis, this is from the Washington Post, who has made the environment a clear focus of his papacy over the past 3 years, deepened his vision Thursday of a green church in which caring for it is an important Catholic commitment as much as caring for the sick. In case you didn't, Catholics currently subscribe seven corporal, seven spiritual works of mercy, obligations that include shelterless, visiting prisoners, and burying the dead. On Thursday, in an address explaining why Catholics must make practical changes in their daily routines to safeguard the earth, Francis added, care for the environment, work of mercy. When we mistreat nature, he said, we also mistreat human beings. This is leading to ever more severe droughts, floods, fires, and extreme weather events, Francis wrote in a paper earlier this year. Climate change is also contributing to the heart-rending refugee crisis. The world's poor for climate change are most vulnerable and already suffering its impact. Does this have you lining up to convert to Catholicism?
I wouldn't say that.
Gentlemen?
Wait, who? who has become a refugee because of global warming? I'm really confused.
Well, since since the State Department blames the entirety of the Syrian crisis on global warming, So all Syrian refugees are considered global warming refugees.
What? I missed that. How did global warming cause the Syrian refugee crisis?
It didn't.
Did we get into this?
I don't remember this at all. Global warming.
Oh, you have podcast amnesia, sir. Well, global warming caused ISIS. ISIS caused the destabilization in the region. Also, droughts. Something about droughts. I don't remember the exact story. You can Google it. But
I remember the global warming called ISIS thing, but I didn't know it caused the Syrian refugees.
Well, because it caused the Syrian conflict and the refugees had to flee the conflict, those are global warming refugees. It's an A equals B. If B equals C, then A equals C kind of argument.
Well, it's that Victor Hugo mentality, right? Unlimited progress. All people need are just education and resources, and their inner goodness will come out. You know, that kind of mentality. That really isn't true. I mean, it's unfortunate that the Pope is purporting this and trying to galvanize this kind of support for environmentalism by just this ridiculous call to altruism. And it's very striking that we're discussing this the day that they canonized Mother Teresa, herself has been the subject of a lot of discussion on the internet today. And I think a lot of people are little by little are starting to kind of wake up to this Pope and to what it is that he's actually standing for. And even a lot of my Catholic libertarian friends are just starting to stand up. Wait a minute, this guy is a socialist. This guy is not. This guy does not represent me. And I think little by little, people are going to wake up to that. But yeah, it makes me think of Victor Hugo. I'm saying that because I'm rereading Les Misérables right now, and I think a lot of his attitude is shining through the Pope. Like, it's this idea that human beings, they just need they just need a little education. They just need a little progress. You know, if they had a little bit of more money, then they would have much more benevolence and they would be more willing. They would be their best versions of themselves, you know, and unfortunately it's just not true. There's philosophical and moral undergirdings that need to come into play before there can be any kind of progress in any individual person's life. And none of that is related to progress of society as a whole.
Well, the Pope thinks that you're killing the planet, Elliot. So in his message, it's my favorite part, by the way. In his message, he said that every Catholic should go to confession to repent his or her sins against the environment.
Wait, so every time I took a piss outside, is that a sin against the environment?
that's three Hail Marys right there.
That's a crime against nature is not the same thing as sin against the environment.
How is it not?
By the way, the concrete change. So my favorite part of this is not just the go to confess your sins against the environment, which if we go back to original sins, having been born is your sin against the environment.
Well, this is what I was saying last episode about externalities. He has taken the leftist idea of externalities being original sin and applied it to original sin. Necessarily, you have an effect on the environment if you're born.
Yes, absolutely. And by the way, so you have this sin against the environment, and then this is what Francis suggests is what you can do to minimize your sins against the environment. He suggests turning off lights to avoid wasting energy, to cook more food than is necessary, and using public transportation or even carpooling to cut down on gasoline use.
So socialist Soviet Union basically is what he wants.
Ration is his solution. Yeah. Ration.
But but number two is not rationing. Make more food than you need?
But what does that mean? The context of it is dumb because there can be meals where we make more food than we need. We put it in the refrigerator and we eat it later.
But it's not even the point.
More food than you need. Like, who cares? It literally does nothing.
Wait, maybe I misheard you.
You might make these arguments that you're saving food, or you're saving money. But it does nothing for the planet, and that's not the point. The point
Did
is
he
wants
say,
to be
don't make more food than you need?
Yeah, he said, don't make more food.
Oh, I misheard you. I thought he was saying two. I was like, no, that hurts the environment.
Oh. unless you're going to take it to a homeless shelter, I guess. I don't.
Well, I thought it was like to stock up. But I have a question about this story.
You're thinking of the Mormons. Okay.
The Mormons.
I have a question about this story, though. When did the Pope become a scientist?
Dr. Pope, MD.
Like, now is Bill Nye going to come out and start giving religious advice?
Like, he does in a way. When he talks about environmentalism. It's only a matter of time before these two things collide, because they both rely on incredible amounts of faith. You have to have faith in the quote-unquote science behind this in order to take it seriously. You have to have faith that the environment floating abstraction that can be harmed or hurt by your actions, independent of an environment for whom. That's the number one thing that people forget to ask, by the way, is what is the environment? What does that mean? An environment is an environment for something or someone. And as Alex Epstein is wont to point out all the time, rightly so, the human environment has never been better in world history. So what the fuck are we talking about? Both of these are offshoots of altruism, which I think Elliot pointed out already, so I won't beat that to death. And it was only a matter of time before they converged, because they want the same thing, which is basically human beings to be ascetic, to take no pleasure in life, to take no pleasure in existence, to not live for your own sake, but to live for the sake of something else, anything else, other human beings, the environment, God, whatever it is, live for something else other than yourself. And by the way, I have great respect for Catholicism and Catholics in general, but this guy, this Pope and his ideology is basically the worst of the worst. This is bottom of the barrel Catholicism. This is not Catholicism that gives us Thomas Aquinas. This is Catholicism that gives us fucking Dark Ages. So,
well, yeah, to bring it back to the opening of the store of the show, where is this Pope from?
Mexico, as Trump would say.
Argentina, I think.
Yeah. When do we do well with popes? When they're from Poland. So. I'm only half kidding, by the way.
Make the Pope Polish again.
Yeah, there you go. I'm going to make that hat.
The last one was German. He was pretty good. I mean, a little Nazi looking in the face, but other than that. Speaking of Nazi looking in the face, apparently we shouldn't talk to anyone ever. At least that's according to Sonny Bunch over at the Washington Free Beacon. Sonny Bunch, we've featured on the show quite a bit, entertaining author in many ways, has some insights on things. He's responding to a post, an article, probably HuffPo, I'm guessing. No, themodernman.com, called How to Talk to a Woman Who is Wearing Headphones, and basically the article is saying just don't. So that's a great insight. But Sonny takes it further, and he says, basically, you shouldn't be talking to another human being. Like, no one wants to be bothered, essentially. So he talks about, certainly people wearing headphones, talk to them, but people in an elevator, if they're checking their email, if they're staring blankly with their mouth agape like a hominid before the monolith, don't ask them how their day was. Don't make chit-chat. Don't joke about how we all just stare at screens and, human beings is basically his argument. Don't talk to strangers at restaurants. Don't talk to strangers at work. Don't talk to anyone. Talking is awful. People are the worst. It's hard to imagine a more horrifying combination than talking to people. Now, Justin, I think you were the first one in our little thread to say that this read like satire.
It has to be satire. It has to be. There's no way this is real. It can't be.
Okay. Yeah. Now, look, I agree with you, except that independently, I have now counted 7 people share it in my newsfeed who wholeheartedly agree with the article's thesis.
Give me their names. We can either call them out right now, or I will message each of them individually and ask them if they realize this is satire or not, and if they don't, ask them why they think it's not satire.
Outside of us.
Well, that was why I wanted to bring this up, because this is a big thing for Justin. I know Justin gets frustrated when he tries to talk to people and they're basically just brush him off. But what percentage of the population do you think actually agrees with this?
I think it's low, but I think it's the equivalent of the whole social justice thing, where it's the loud 30% versus 70% are nice people who don't care, the whole silent majority thing. I mean, the problem I've always had is not just when I get the pushback, because the pushback is rare, especially as I've sort of opened up more and I'm nicer to people now. It's I internalized this for a long time in my life, that people didn't want to be bothered and people didn't want to be talked to. So I didn't talk to people. And the reason I have to believe that this is satire is I know that by not talking to people, I didn't accomplish things and get where I wanted to be socially or professionally. So I know that people who have made it places had to have done it by talking to people. So this person is either writing from a hole in the wall where he makes no money, or she, I don't know, Sonny, and is never going anywhere, or this is satire to make fun of that article.
It is satire, because you know who Sonny Bunch is, right?
No.
He's like, outside of us, he's the only other person that defends Sucker Punch and a lot of the works of Zack Snyder, like with everything. Like, he gets ribbed by other people because of how much he loves Sucker Punch. So I'm believing that this is satire because I read a lot of his other stuff. I don't think he is on our level in terms of Zack Snyder worship, but he likes a lot of Zack Snyder stuff and defends him from a lot of other people in his articles. So I don't know. I think this is satire just from what I've read of his other stuff.
I accept that argument, Snydered.
You just got Snydered. Mm-hmm. I agree with you both that this is satire. That's not the reason I wanted this to be in the news or wanted to talk about it. The reason I want to talk about it is that people still think he's making a good argument. Even people I think who recognize this as satire would say, actually, I do agree with this. And one of the things I wanted to bring up is if you thought if it was regional or ethnocultural or ideological or something. Certainly women use this as a shield mechanism, right? At least some horrible women do.
Right.
Where if a guy they don't find attractive or interesting talks to them, they can use this as like an ew, creepy. Yeah. Why would you talk to me or initiate with anyone? But if, you know, justice warrior guy du jour walks up to them and says, hey, how you doing? Would you like to blow me? They'd be fucking drooling and all over him. So is this what is this? Regional, cultural, ideological?
Well, I think it's a bit of all of it, probably.
No. Because it's not regional, because I witnessed it where I grew up, and I witnessed it out here, and I witnessed it in Clemson. So it's worse in certain regions, and I will explain why it's worse in certain regions. Do you want to hear, or do you just want to make weird sounds like...
I prefer to just belittle you with weird sounds. Because, like, for instance,
is that your impersonation
Texas
of a modem?
Yes. In Texas, for instance, people would talk to me all the fucking time, just randomly. If I was standing near another person, it was probably a greater than 75% chance that they would initiate a conversation with me.
Mm-hmm.
Orlando?
Doesn't happen I almost said in Disney because you just said Orlando. in D.C., where I am, and certainly like on the goddamn metro, if you talk to someone, they might stab you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So go ahead.
Orlando, I mean, we're so trained to talk to people because so many people here work in hospitality in one of the parks or one of the hotels. So people talk here. I mean, I don't know. That's why I'm saying I think it's a little bit of everything, regional, social, psychological. I think it's a little bit of everything because here, it's not necessarily that, I think it's a bit contextual also. Not everybody wants to talk all the time. Some people, you know, every once in a while, I just want to be left alone and have my headphones plugged in. But
don't go in public.
But for me, you know, like I like to talk to people, and people like to talk to me too. So I think that this is one of those things that may be true, like in the bigger cities, places with subways and metros and all that other stuff. But I don't think that it's true everywhere.
It's interesting to me that you guys are working backwards this time. You know, you're going more inductively, which is interesting because there is a principle behind this, and we have discussed it before. First of all, I want to say that I do agree completely with Elliot. If you go to areas that are primarily driven by tourism, the hospitality industry makes it so that everyone in the town is nice. The areas of Anaheim near Disney are this way because that's what they are. It's all tourists. I'm sure Orlando's that way. This is one of the reasons Vegas is one of the best cities in the world, yeah, because it's an entire city completely driven by tourism. So if you're a dick and people don't come back, you are done. You're over. So you have to be nice to people. So that's one of the reasons I prefer cities where it's based upon tourism. But there is a principle we have talked about on this show before, and I'm surprised you guys don't remember it.
Principal Skinner?
Yeah, yeah. Do you remember the Interpersonal Hostility edition?
Vaguely.
This is where
podcast amnesia.
So this is the idea that some people just conceptualize interpersonal relationships as hostile. That's their way of viewing the world. I mean, maybe you can call it a malevolent universe premise, but I would actually say it's like more like a quadrant where you can have a benevolent universe premise, a malevolent universe premise, an interpersonal hostile quadrant, and then whatever the other. What's the opposite of hostile?
Benevolent? Amicable?
Yeah, I didn't want to use the word benevolent again. So we'll say amicable. I don't know, just generous, gregarious. And it's the idea that these people think that whenever they're interacting with someone, the other person's trying to attack them or get something from them. It can't just be like, hey, this person's nice and wants to get to know me type deal. When you talk to people who want to be talked to, that's the perspective they have. Hey, I want to just get to know people and be nice and interact. But when you talk to people who don't want to be talked to, you can tell they're super defensive. And I think that's what it comes down to. Why does that tend to happen in cities? Well, when you're on the subway and everyone could be a crazy person, I can understand why you would be more defensive. It's a lot easier, rather than taking the effort to, one, analyze everyone you come across, and two, come up with a set of principles to analyze people by easily. It's a lot easier to just paint everyone with the same brush and say, oh, all of these people are hostile. That way you never get attacked. So I would say that's why it tends to happen more in cities. And why does it tend to happen with people who are more altruistic? Well, this is the whole Starnesville thing. You're always comparing yourself and making sure they're not getting more than you. So you think everyone is in a goddamn arms race with each other, trying to dick each other over.
Now, I will attempt to defend to some degree this article and not satire, or this article as making a good point, but beep, I don't. Did you just die? Did you flatline?
No, that was me impersonating a modem.
Horrible. C minus. But I won't do it from an interpersonal hostility thing. I'll do it from more of an introvert kind of thing, because as someone who is mostly introverted, although not completely introverted, mostly introverted, it took me a long time growing up to realize that I'd be benevolent and introverted, which means I can understand that people want to talk to me or who I need to talk to. It's a completely benevolent relationship, but I can still not want to do it. And I feel that way all the time. Maybe this is a psychological confession right now on the show, but when given, for like, the rise of the internet and app culture to me has been heavenly. Why? Because I get to interact with fewer people. Like, given a choice between going to a new restaurant that requires me to call them to set up a reservation, or go to an old restaurant I know I can book on Yelp, I will 100% of the time book a restaurant on Yelp. I never call the restaurant because I don't want to. I don't want to interact with that person. I don't think there's anything wrong with them. I don't think there's anything wrong with me. I don't think we're out to dick each other over. I just don't want to interact. When I'm walking around and someone asks me for directions, I don't think it's malevolent on their part, but I just wish they wouldn't have. I just don't want them to. I don't wish them any harm. I help them. I actually get out my phone to make sure that I'm giving them 100% the right directions. I'll give them as much time as they need, but I wish they hadn't done it. So what is that, Dr. Lesneski?
It's interesting that you give them as much time as they need. That's what the revealing psychological thing is to me. And I think this has to do with your listening to people, where I think being social for someone who is introverted takes a lot of energy. And I think you're revealing that it takes a lot of energy because of how seriously you take the other person. You won't even see them at all pragmatically. Like, I don't like to call restaurants because, to me, it's a drain because I have to deal with their stupidity. It's the same thing usually when people ask for directions. Like, I'll give them the optimal directions. I'll be like, do this, turn this way. There's the landmark. That's the street name. Go in this direction, you know, east, west, north, south. And no matter the directions, they still have to ask me five other fucking questions, even though I've told them exactly where to go. And it's the same thing with calling a restaurant. Like, I ask a simple question, and it turns into a 10-minute conversation because they can't just give me the information I need. But for someone like you who has to take people seriously and listen to them, I can see why it would be very draining for you and you wouldn't want to talk to them because you're worried about respecting their personhood. Where with me, I'm getting tired of giving someone directions and they're not hearing me, I'll just be like, I gotta go. And I'll just leave because fuck them.
Yes, I have a sort of British mentality about that. I was watching a show the other day called Very British Problems. All I could do was cry self-reflection. And what I mean by that is, I think you're right. I don't want to get into the conversation at all. I just don't want to get into it. But the moment I do, I'm fully invested. And the only thing worse conversation is leading it awkwardly. Like, I can't do it. I could never, if someone wasn't getting the directions, I could never just walk away from them. I'd probably spend half a day helping them because I couldn't pull myself away from doing it. I mean, obviously if I had somewhere to be, like an employment or whatever, but I'm a walker. I like to walk. I've spent literally 15 or 20 minutes a couple times helping people with goddamn directions in Washington, D.C. because it's the city designed by a fucking sadist. I just will not give up until they get to where they need to go.
See, this is so interesting because it's the inverse of me usually. Like, usually, like, when we're talking about who to be friends with and who to have in your life and blah, 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 you're like, well, does it fit your values and fit your goals and just deal with them that way? But in this micro position, this micro event, you have the opposite perspective, where I have the opposite perspective as well, where I'm just like, ah, fuck them. I always have somewhere to be, like, if you're taking up too much of my time, you're fucking with my schedule, fuck you, like... But that I would never do that in a macro way. But you do that in a macro way by avoiding people. But you don't do it in a micro way.
Yeah.
You see how that's like so interesting?
Well, yes, because I want to not be in those situations as much as possible, which is why I'm in public anywhere, I have headphones in. I may not be listening to anything.
Why don't you try practicing that if you're giving someone directions and they're not understanding, just try practicing and say, that's how you get there. I'm sorry. I got to go. Just practice doing that and not feeling guilty about it.
But I don't feel guilt's not the emotion that I associate with it. It's just like an intense displeasure. Not that I've wronged them, but that I like wronged myself in this situation.
You want to see it through. You want to make sure that if you have been asked of something, you just, it's not that you feel guilty, but you want to see it through because you've begun it. You've given the directions that they're not getting it. It's really more about just the certainty of knowing that you have followed through and that this person has gotten where he needs to get to.
Yeah, that's very close, I think, Elliot. I mean, not that I've deeply thought about this psychologically, but one of the ways that I view myself internally is as a communicator. Mm-hmm. And when I fail at communication, I take that very seriously.
Yeah, but what's the first thing? It has to be a convincible audience. If the dude's too stupid to understand your directions, like if a guy comes up to you and is like, hola, ¿dónde está la biblioteca? Do you go, oh man, I'm going to sit here and learn Spanish until I can give you the proper directions?
No, I'd probably go, no inglés. No, you want my map? And then I would hand him my phone. That's not true. I would not hand him my phone, but that's a different thing.
It's like, not, though. It's the same thing.
If
the guy
is
too stupid to understand you, it's not the same. It's not any different.
He's not stupid, by the way, Justin, just because he's Mexican, racist.
No, I'm not saying the Mexican's stupid. I am equating stupidity with
the inability. You're equating stupidity with being Mexican.
No, I am not. That is a straw man, you piece of shit. I am equating not being able to understand.
Mexicans are pieces of shit now.
half Mexicans are a piece of shit. I'm equating not being able to understand a foreign language with not being able to think properly. Which can be misunderstood, but yeah. But
Trump 2016.
If you understand what I'm saying, the point is, you never mind.
I got you. I'm just being a dick to you.
I know you are.
I understand you. It's a different context when someone speaks the language. If this is a, you know, let's call them a Midwestern family with 2.5 kids and a dog, and they're trying to find the capital. And, you know, like, I'm literally pointing at the Capitol, like, you can see it from anywhere in the goddamn district. And I'm still not getting it. I think it's a failure of communication on my part. And I need to get the communication correct.
Nope. It's their
There's
fault.
Something I'm doing that is not connecting.
Don't work for Disney. Where's the Haunted Mansion? You're standing right in front of it. Oh, where is it? It's right behind me. Where is it? It's right behind me. Do you see that haunted-looking building on the hill? It's right there.
And that's what I'm saying. Now, yeah. If you work for Disney, your paycheck's dependent upon it. But otherwise, yeah. I would be like, it's right behind me. And they'd be like, where? And I'd be like, right behind me. I gotta go.
Go.
Good luck. I hope you find it.
gotta go right now. Gotta go.
All right, therapy session over.
All right. Let's dump on some shit, because that'll make you feel better and be cathartic, right?
Yeah.
All right. Let's head into the hopeful romantic with JML. Put me into syndication, broadcast to a network station of people viewing their favorite episodes. I can't find a new pitch to throw the studio. I need a rerun to better cast the next series of events. In the air timeline lapse, my made-for-TV type was written off. In the last season when I wasn't focused. Still don't have a sound effect here, so do you want to do it, Daniel?
Trailer takedown.
All right, good enough. That was actually pretty good. It almost sounded like a video game. We may just make you record that and put a filter on it.
I'm getting better.
So, okay, again, we have three here. The first two are superhero. The third is, I'm not really sure. So the first one is a Russian superhero movie called Guardians. Hug or tackle?
Bear hug to the ground. This is just going to be one of those movies like Pacific Rim that I just fully acknowledge is a completely shitty, terrible movie, and I leave the theater smiling an enormous shit-eating grin, like, yes, thank you, world, for giving me that.
You're the one who sits here and says you hate every fucking trailer and hate movies, and you're going to see this movie.
I'm going to see this goddamn movie. Maybe I won't see it in theaters, but I will see this movie, and I will enjoy the fuck out of this movie. For anyone who's unaware, you need to watch this trailer. It is over the top, beyond bizarre, strange. It's like it's the Russian Fantastic Four.
Basically,
as the best as I can describe it.
Yeah. I don't understand. After all the shit you talk about every movie, you're gonna watch this movie. I mean, Pacific Rim was at least directed by Guillermo del Toro, who has a very unique aesthetic.
Yeah. I'm already telling you this movie is shit, and I'm still going to see it.
Elliot.
That's not really my cup of tea. I love superhero movies, but yeah, this just had, like, you know, Mystery Science Theater 3000 written all over it. You know what I mean? Like, I would only go to this movie to riff on it and to make fun of it. I would never actually go to see
this
it.
This may not be your cup of tea, but it's definitely my shot of vodka.
So. I like that.
Fucking Christ. I think we may have kicked Daniel out of Trailer Takedown forever based upon this.
Trailer Takedown.
As you can tell, I think this movie is absolutely fucking ridiculous. Segments of the internet went nuts over it, which I was very confused about, because they actually think it's going to be good.
No. Incorrect. It will not be good. It will be complete and utter shite, and I will laugh my ass off and have a good time.
Yeah, I can't really critique you for that. I mean, I have a horror movie called WrestleManiac about a Mexican luchador who rips people's faces off like he's ripping their masks off. So I can't really critique.
I didn't think it could get worse than Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
Come on, you know one of my favorite movies is Santa's Slay, which is S-L-A-Y.
Dude, some of the Friday the 13th movies are just hysterical and over the top. Oh my god, I love the one where he goes to New York and he's on the subway in the 80s. Oh my goodness.
Jason. Yeah, have you ever seen Jason X, Jason in Space?
Oh god, yes, where the girl's like, this sucks, and she gets sucked out through like the little hole in there.
Yeah, and the black guy gets stabbed in the back through a wall, and he goes, it's going to take a lot more than that to keep an old dog down. And then they stab him again, and he goes, that'll do it. And then he dies.
Oh, man. Justin, I think there's still a market for our movie of rape zombies, otherwise known as rapesies.
Well, that was that British guy's idea.
That British guy.
Yeah.
I thought that was your idea. All this time, I've been hyping up your idea to people, and it's plagiarized.
Well, it's not completely plagiarized. It's it was a riff off of when we were shooting Brobita, and what was his name? Steve, the British guy who played Brent's roommate, and he came in and he said,
"Yes,
yeah." Well, Steve, one time he ad-libbed about like rape zombies or something.
Awesome. Also, the idea we came up with at Six Flags that day. Do you remember the zombie Jesus?
Yeah, Risen. Doesn't somebody have a movie called Risen, except it's a serious pro-Jesus movie now?
Yeah.
Our idea, Elliot, is that scientists discover the tomb of Jesus, and they're like unearthing the rock, and they're like going into the cave, and it turns out that the reason he was sealed in there is because he was a zombie.
And he was the first zombie, so he starts the plague, which you can now then both do a sequel series and a prequel series, because you can have the whole first series about stopping the zombie outbreak and locking him in the cave and how that spawns religion, and then you can also have the modern series, which is about the new outbreak, which is also a commentary on modern religion.
It's perfect, and we were just going to call it Risen.
Yeah, but now there's like a Christian movie called Risen.
Fine, we'll call it He is Risen.
No, it's better if it's called Risen, but whatever. So the next trailer we have here is Max Steel. This is based off of
A porn, surprisingly. I was shocked.
This is based off of Mattel series of action figures. And it reminds me of Flight of the Navigator meets Power Rangers.
This is a kid who gets a suit and a robot friend, and together they fight bad guys.
Well, I think the robot friend becomes the suit. So I think he has superpowers, but then when he needs to hulk up extra, the robot joins him and becomes a suit. That's why it reminds me of Power Rangers. It's like, oh no, the bad guy's too strong. I can only beat the putties. Come on, robot. And then the robot, like, jumps on his
face. And also the Power Rangers are going through puberty, but yes.
Yeah.
Never heard of this toy cartoon, whatever it was before this. I'm on their website now, and apparently one of the enemies is a sentient gorilla. Grodd! We've heard that before.
Yeah. Grodd! I wonder if that came before or after Gorilla Grodd, or before or after Planet of the Apes.
I don't know. Is Max Steel DC, or?
No, it's Mattel.
Oh, it's Mattel.
It's neither.
Mm. I'm going to... what's the bad one?
Tackle.
tackle this one. I can't do this. It's just another cheesy kids superhero movie that is not going to have a lot of depth to it, I suspect. So. And I have no sentiment. I have no emotional connection to it. I have no, you know, if I had kids who played with the toys, or if I had played with the toys, I'm out.
No, I'm gonna go. I'm gonna go see it. I tell you, I like this.
You're fucking people this week, man. You're fucking surprising me. I feel like I feel obligated on the next trailer now. I feel obligated, but go ahead.
No, I mean, I like ooey gooey stuff, and I think that, you know, a film like Max, I think it had a lot of potential romantic elements to it. You know, the idea of somebody, the pursuit of learning more about his father, and the idea of acquiring abilities and how you master them and how you can employ them to improve your life and the life of the people around you. And there's stuff in there I might check out, you know?
I will say this, Elliot. I think that was the most benevolent interpretation of that trailer possible.
Well, I tell you, I'm a softy at heart. I'm an ooey gooey person.
The robot was kind of funny.
Yeah, well, that's why I said it reminded me of Flight of the Navigator. Remember Pee-wee voiced the robot in Flight of the Navigator?
See, it reminded me of Big Hero 6 a little bit. Like, that was his Baymax.
Yeah, I still
haven't seen it. By the way, also the name of Pee-wee Herman's penis.
Baymax?
Big Hero 6.
Oh, Big Hero 6. Surprised it took so long to make that joke. Okay, last trailer. This is called Manchester by the Sea, and it stars Casey Affleck as a guy with a really thick Boston accent who is forced to be the legal guardian of his nephew, I think? It was kind of unclear. But it was clear that he didn't want to be it, and he was forced to because somebody died, and they all talked to each other in Boston accents. That was what was clear to me from the trailer.
Justin just now stopped furiously masturbating.
you want to know my impression of this? I was like, I already saw this movie. It's called The Fighter, and Amy Adams did it better than Michelle Williams. That was what I thought when watching this trailer.
This trailer is strange. All the other people watch this trailer, Manchester by the Sea, there are parts of this trailer that are brilliant. And then parts of this trailer where I'm going, what the fuck are you doing? And they come like one after the other, sort of rotating, where I, like, the first time I watched this, I was like, oh, I'm all in. And then like a minute in, I'm thinking, this is dumb. I'm never seeing this. And by 2 minutes, I'm back. I'm seeing this movie. Like, I don't know what's going on with the trailer. So hopefully the movie is edited better. I'm going to tentatively hug this one.
Yeah, me too.
Jesus. About the only thing this had going for it was the Boston accent.
There was a touching story to it.
Why do I care?
I think the teenager's funny.
Yeah, no, the kid, the acting was good. Like, I can't fault the acting, but tell me why I care. Why do I care? What makes this story worth telling?
A cricket. What? Pick a reason. The kid has a, it's a heart warming story of a guy who has to take care of his brother's son, and they're from Boston.
Don't care.
There you go. Fine. Be a heartless dick.
By the way, we're talking to the person who it took like till the end of the third episode to actually give a shit about Stranger Things. The whole first two episodes, I was like, I don't care. I don't care. Give me a reason to care.
I told you. How much of it have you seen, by the way?
I've only seen the first three episodes so far.
Oh my god, dude.
We will review it on the podcast. Yes. All right, the last thing I want to talk to you guys about, and I don't necessarily want to talk about this interview in specific, but we can use it as evidence for this discussion. I want to talk to you guys about the Honest Trailers phenomenon. And when I say that, I don't just mean Honest Trailers themselves. I mean things like weird trailers, where someone did the weird trailer for Justice League, or they do these Cinema Sins or other type YouTube channels like this. Because I want to know what you guys think of Honest Trailers and the like. Do you have an opinion? Do you care? Do you think they're good entertainment? Do you think they're bad entertainment?
I think the only Honest Trailer I've ever watched was for Batman vs. Superman. It was so we could discuss it. Honest in regards to what? Like, you think they lied to us with their trailer? And what would that even mean? Honest in terms of the portrayal of the movie, I guess, is what they're really going for.
Right, that's the whole conceit. Their conceit is, what if trailers really portrayed movies as they actually were?
But wouldn't I have had to have seen the movie in order for me to understand that? I'm not their market. It's not something that interests me at all. I want to see the artist creation. I don't necessarily want to see a meta creation based on art that person could never have come up with.
So that's interesting. That is an interesting sort of way of pinpointing it. I hadn't quite put it that way. Because to me, there seems to be something immoral. And I think it's what you just said. You're not creating something yourself. You're piggybacking off of the success of another artist and just remixing their stuff completely. You know, it's not even the same thing as hip-hop where you take a beat and appropriate it, ironically.
Although it's what I hate about hip-hop as well. But
okay, yeah. Well, that's fair that you take it even stronger. I wouldn't quite go that far because they will appropriate it and recut it, and then they will add their own elements over this. All something like an honest trailer does, like in the sense of the example of Batman versus Superman, is they'll take what was already done and they'll put it in there and they'll say things about it that aren't true. They'll drop context in order to make jokes. And I have a really big problem with that.
Yeah. And by the way, I don't mean to suggest, as we do a podcast, that commentary is a bad thing or necessarily, secondary. But this isn't even commentary per se. This is basically just taking any work of art, deconstructing it to add absurdum, and thus saying, look at our cleverness. We've created something new because we've deconstructed this thing. Well, that would be all fine and well if you actually constructed anything at all yourself new. But you don't. So I have no interest in that.
Right. Go ahead, Elliot.
I was going to say the only honest trailer that I think actually made me laugh was the Deadpool one. And it's only because Ryan Reynolds, as Deadpool, took it over and did the commentary for his own movie. But I think that's the only time that it actually has made me laugh, really.
Because the conceit lined up with the character.
Right.
That's all it is. The conceit of the program lined up with the character. Daniel, part of the reason I even brought this in this episode is exactly what you just said, is a point I make in the vlog I'm releasing. I'm starting a series called Midside Moments, and the first one is about all the noise that's out there. And there actually is a small snippet of the Batman versus Superman honest trailer in there about how they say Wonder Woman's tacked on in that movie, which isn't true at all. And I make that point. The problem I have with the noise that's out there is not the people who are creating. It's the amount of people who are just talking about in a negative way or trying to prove their superiority to people who have created. Think of the number of reviews that are just shitting on or saying negative things about. Or it's like this where, you know, honest trailers, hey, look how I can, as you just said, make something new from something somebody else did. And weird trailers is the same way. Look at how I can be derisive and undermine this trailer that's serious by adding ridiculous elements to it.
Yeah, and so there's a fine line here, right? So, I mean, there are a couple of levels. The first level being that I'm always going to favor creation over commentary. Not that I think that commentary is bad. Commentary can be very good and add a certain level to it, but there has to be something to comment on, right? So the priority should be given to the creation itself or the creative process itself and not necessarily the comedy. And the second is, if your comedy form is parody, you have to be very good at parody in order to get the essential of the thing. And you can only get the essential of the thing by not lying about the thing. So to be a good someone who creates parody, satirist, I guess.
No, it's not a satirist because the satire is different from parody.
Whatever. To create good parody, you have to truly understand the essentials of the thing and be able to create the humor based on the essentials. When you're creating the humor based on something that is false or not even in the thing, you're not doing parody. You're doing shitty commentary.
And I want to. I agree with that completely. And I want to drive home one other point. Creating is superior to commentary necessarily. But also, aren't you going to get better at commentary? And the only way to be a superior commentator is to create
something. You have to create something of your own. Yeah, I mean, just because, look, I don't necessarily think that a good movie critic has to make his own movies, but he has to understand the process and he has to understand filmmaking in a way that is simply not, I like this thing or I don't like this thing. He has to understand the craft and give reasons based on the craft for the commentary.
And you have an
most people,
you have an entire generation who's never seen the great movies or read the great novels. They have nothing with which they can actually understand and grasp what makes a good film or a good novel.
Yeah, but even taking what Daniel's saying, even beyond having read the great novels and seen the great films, understanding how they're made. And that's more than watching the commentary tracks and watching the behind the scenes. I mean, I think it's even more than going to set. I think you would actually be a superior movie critic if you actually tried to make
day
your own, or you tried to write your own or edit your own. I think you would be a superior movie critic. It's the same sense
you
in
could
like,
be, but I'm saying
who would you rather listen to as a commentator? Troy Aikman or Billy Bob on the couch?
Is Billy Bob on the couch an actual commentator on football?
No, I just couldn't think of another example, so I made up something that sounded realistic.
We're recording.
You gotta wait for the cue, dude.
Oh, there was no. Oh, I thought the cue was silence. Okay,
no,
go ahead, do it again.
In production, someone gives you a cue, okay? You're fucking talent, dude. Jesus fucking Christ.
Right. Necessary to be a good commentator for you to have done the thing. I don't disagree that it can help. I just don't think it's 100% necessary.
Okay, what if you've never done the thing and all you do is tell people what they're doing wrong?
Well, that's what I'm saying is you have to have done something else. The basis of criticism is not your emotion. The basis of criticism. The basis of criticism should be this thing within a given context, which is why we use the example over and over again. Ayn Rand praising Salvador Dali as one of the best artists, certainly of her time, maybe ever, but hating the content of a lot of his work, hating the imagery. But understanding that in terms of skill and technique and representation and symbolism, he was a master, even though he didn't do what she liked emotionally. And most critics don't separate those two things. And especially internet critics or honest trailer folks or any other asshole on the internet with access to a webcam, there is no separation for them between I feel this way about this thing and this thing is good or bad.
Well, that's why Zack Snyder commentaries are just all over the place. They always, that's why when they draw these false comparisons between Snyder films and the Marvel movies, oh, they say Snyder films are so dark and they're so gritty and they're so this and that. And, you know, you just want to pull your hair out because you always try to explain to people that even if the tone of the film is darker, the themes are much more benevolent in a Snyder film than in a Marvel film. When you actually break down what films like Civil War, for example, when you try to break down the actual philosophical premises under that movie and under the plot, I mean, it is a much more malevolent film than Batman versus Superman, but people wrongly attribute theme and style as being synonymous with a sense of life. That's where this emotionalism comes from.
I would also question how a theme that's benevolent can have a malevolent or dark tone. I don't understand how Batman versus Superman can have a dark tone when you look at the theme. There are dark elements to it because of the whole, well, we're shitting on Superman and Superman not sure of what to do. But ultimately, I don't think it's a dark tone. I think it's a hopeful tone, which is the fucking point of Superman, right? As far as Snyder has made me understand him.
Well, that grittiness comment that people make all the time. You know what I mean? It's dark, it's gritty, and
but that's what
so
I mean
horrible.
With someone who hasn't created trying to say that. That's someone who doesn't know what it means to create something gritty to say that.
But I don't even think, I mean, I agree with you, Justin, but I don't think that's even necessary. They're reacting to their emotional sensations of the film. Why wouldn't someone see a picture as dark who thinks that fighting for your own values, not who thinks that not sacrificing is a bad, evil thing? Of course they're going to see that as a dark film. Superman standing up for his person, himself, his values, not altruistically the world. Of course they're going to interpret that emotionally as being bad, dark, gritty, because that's the world they see as the dark, gritty, bad one. The one where people are out for themselves.
This has turned into more of a preview than I intended it to. So we've got my vlogs coming up, which will delve more into this sort of topic of giving more of sort of rational criticism and rational discussion and rational commentary, because I think a lot of that is missing from what's popular in the YouTube universe. And also Daniel's commentary that we just heard will certainly be part of the Batman versus Superman Ultimate Edition entry in the Snyder series, which will be coming up in October.
Woot.
So let's round out this episode by talking about some of those assholes on the internet Daniel was alluding to. It's time for Reddit on Reddit.
Sony, stupid, Xbox, lame, PC, gaming all the way, EA, blow, Steam, rocks, got Risk, home on Firefox. These things are all on Reddit. Mostly pics of felines, comma, boring felines. These things are all on Reddit. No, we didn't post it, but we will repost it.
First Reddit. I tried to sum up my entire fantasy football experience in one flowchart. Am I missing anything? And if you click on this flowchart, it's very humorous because it took me a while to read the whole thing, but basically the whole thing is a giant joke talking about how fantasy football is luck and it's always the person you think is least likely to win who's going to win. And I included that this week because earlier today, Daniel and I just finished up our official Welcome to the Midside fantasy draft, and a few of you listeners are actually part of the draft and got to see my real-time reactions to somebody taking Tom Brady early.
Indeed. The league, by the way, is called Belichick Your Premises.
We still need to make that shirt.
Yeah, which is a personal favorite of mine. And the league, or the divisions are Blue Hoodie Division and Gray Hoodie Division.
Oh, I didn't notice that. Just don't do the red hoodie. We do not acknowledge the red hoodie after
we don't acknowledge the red hoodie. No one acknowledges the red
hoodie. He's never worn a red hoodie since. You know that, right?
I know. Indeed. It's awesome. But fantasy football, being luck, I know everyone loves the football talk here at the Midside. None more than me. And none more than Mark, by the way. Thank you, Mark. But look. Fantasy football is like any form of gambling, and you don't even have to put money on it. It's still a form of gambling. You're gambling on how players are going to perform. You're gambling on injuries. You're gambling on who you get to play on a week-to-week basis. You're gambling on so many things, and that luck plays a huge percentage in it. What exact percentage? I have no idea, but it is a huge percentage. But then the other portion of it is actually choosing players who have a likelihood of doing well, choosing players on teams that are likely going to perform, choosing players who are likely not going to get injured, who have a track record of being tough, et cetera, not Jamal Charles, for instance, who, you know, trips over a butterfly and tears his ACL.
Tony Romo? But,
exactly.
Tony Romo doesn't need Bane to break his back. He just breaks his back walking.
Right. Don't step on a crack. You will break Tony Romo's back, in fact. But it is luck, but you just have to take it at that level of seriousness, and especially when you're doing it for free. But you could say the same thing about poker. In poker, you have to, if you have pocket aces and you go all in, that doesn't mean you're going to win. It just means you have a higher likelihood of winning pre-flop. That's all it means.
Well, as you can tell, I've definitely internalized this don't take it seriously thing this year. Because first of all, you fucked up my entire strategy. I was going to draft a team of as many quarterbacks as possible and then just trade people for them because we have a 14 team league. So if I was like, if I get four good quarterbacks, I can get all the good players I need. And you fucked it up by putting on a two quarterback roster limit.
Your qualm is not with me, sir, but with the basic rules that you apparently did not consult before.
I don't read the rules. I make up my own rules. I should be allowed to draft.
I do what I want.
My bench should be able to be filled with whoever I want. I should be able
to
fill five kickers. Yeah.
Yes.
No, if I want to have my lineup, I have to fill my starting lineup with the players. But if I want to have five quarterbacks on my bench, I should have that right.
I should have that right.
Freedom.
No. Freedom, motherfucker. This is not the libertarian fantasy football league. There are rules, sir.
Also,
they will be followed.
Did you notice that I crowdsourced my 13th pick out of 14 rounds?
And wasn't that when people told you to draft Calvin Johnson, who retired last year?
Yeah, did you see that I drafted Calvin Johnson?
Now, the joke's going to be on us when next week he announces that he's coming out of retirement to play for the Patriots.
Oh, I'm going to I'm going to put him on injured reserve. Can I do that?
I don't think he technically can be on injured reserve because he's not injured or suspended. But that's he still could come back. When you made that pick, by the way, I have this little thing that the league gave me called Edge, which tells me like which players, like their average draft position, if it's higher or lower than where they're being selected. And when you pick Calvin Johnson, apparently 1% of experts agreed with that pick.
I am the 1%. But no, if you notice with the strategy I went with this year, I went with all players that people don't usually think well of, or I went with younger players. Because my strategy is basically picking the big names and picking the conventional wisdom never gets me anywhere. So I figured, hey, I'll just take some flyers and see what the fuck happens.
Yeah, exactly. Drafting a Blake Bortlesore in the fourth round was a real winner for you, I'm sure.
Hey, but if he's a top 10 quarterback, I'm going to look like a genius.
Got to collect them all. So anyway, we'll get some fantasy football updates throughout the season. Not too many, but we'll let you know how the Midside League is going, who's winning, who's losing. We have players from all around the world, by the way. We have a guy from New Zealand in our league.
Was he in the draft
today? Only could have found us. Yes, indeed.
Which one was he?
Yeah, I forget which team he is. Maybe Manning Up? I don't remember. Or he's the Bears guy, I think.
Okay, because Manning Up picked Osweiler, didn't he? Which was, I found that to be funny.
No, I picked Osweiler.
Oh, did you? Okay. That was a good pick.
Look, okay. How quickly one changes one's tune. Look, you can't simultaneously think DeAndre Hopkins is going to be a top five wide receiver, but not think that Osweiler is going to do fairly well.
Did I say it was a good pick? I didn't change my tune. How did I change my tune?
Well, for a minute there, it sounded like you were going to shit on the choice of Osweiler.
No, but I thought it Osweiler was funny that someone named Manning picked Osweiler after last season. That's all.
Oh, I see your humor. I'm getting defensive.
Yeah.
But not, no, you but generally not, but not make very good defensive picks. Since I ended up, but not very defensive since I had to end up picking the Rams defense. But
Yeah, we'll update fantasy football.
So every other week I'll get. Yeah.
Yeah, every other week you'll be good, and every other week you'll be bad.
Yeah, every other week I'll have 40 points, and the next week I'll have negative 40 points. So
yeah, that's the way the Rams are. Yeah, you said we have a player from New Zealand, so we are truly an international podcast here in the Midside.
Who, by the way, is a Patreon supporter? So
oh yeah, I know.
Thank you.
So we got Swedish Snapchat followers, New Zealand Patreon. We're going to figure out all social media platforms so we can get someone from every country on every social media platform.
Yeah, absolutely. Get on the Chinese one, the Weekway or whatever it's called. That's racist.
All right. But do we want to do this next / last Reddit?
Yes, please.
So this please last Reddit is 2-1 because it was apparently popular on Reddit this week. So I just want to include both of them. The first is, today I learned it is illegal for employers to prohibit employees from discussing their salaries with coworkers. And then somebody else asked, can you get fired for mentioning salary to coworker in Texas or other at-will states? Apparently they didn't read the first today I learned. So Daniel, clear this up as a legal expertise. And also, what should be allowed? Let's talk about that. Should you be allowed to talk about salary with other employees, or is it not in your own interest or not in the employer's interest to allow it?
I thought about this a little bit before in the context of things I don't understand why they're prohibited, like culturally. That brought up is I would actually like to talk more to people about salary. I understand the awkwardness of talking to coworkers about salary because they're all negotiated individually for the most part, unless you're in some horribly socialist collective bargaining nonsense. But here's what should be allowed in terms of employment. Whatever you and your employer agree on, period. And if you and your employer agree that you can't talk about your salary with other people, that's what should be. The end. That should be, if you have a contract, period. I don't care. If your employer says you can't eat lobster at work, and you say, absolutely, that'll be a condition from which I take this job, then no lobster for you, buddy. None. Otherwise, you get your ass fired. But the clear distinction here, by the way, I want to make with this article, or with this Reddit, is if your employer says to you, I am firing you because you talked about your salary with a coworker, that is illegal. If your employer finds out you talked about your salary with a coworker and walks up to you and says, I am firing you for no reason at all because this is an at-will state, that is 100% legal. Say that.
Yeah, that really clarified it.
The people talk about at-will as being, you can, at-will states means you can't be fired for anything, but you can be fired for nothing.
So here's the question I have. Do you think an ideal business would allow their employees to talk about salary or not allow their employees to talk about salary?
It would really depend on the disparity level and the number of people you have doing similar jobs, similar positions. I think in a place that has a lot of employees who have similar positions, who have been there for varying amounts of years and have varying amounts of degrees, it would not be in the employer's interest to do that. But it place, it's much more level than there's no, I mean, why wouldn't they allow someone to do that?
But even in the place where people have been there for a long time and people have varying degrees of experience or education, in an ideal world where people are rational, wouldn't you be able to be like, oh, okay, I recognize that that person has more experience, that's why he gets paid more, rather than get butthurt about it? Like, isn't there something to be said here? Like, why are you fucking comparing? Like, everybody doesn't walk around and whip their dicks out and compare their dick size. Like, why are you walking around trying to find out what everyone else is making?
Wait, where are you working? Yes, except that that's not going to be the problem. And I don't mean the dick thing. I mean the person finding out someone with more experience has more money. What's going to be the problem is someone finding out someone with less experience who's been there only for a little while is making more money than they are.
And what if they're better at the job?
That would be the answer, right? But that's what's going to cause the issues. I don't think it's worth it for the employer to allow it in situations where a lot of that goes on, especially where in situations where salaries are highly individually negotiated.
Well, right. But then this goes back to, again, the whole idea, do you value the quality of the work or do you value the time? The whole idea that because you've worked there longer means you deserve a higher salary means you think it's about the time you've put in, not the quality of the work you do.
Yes, but it also can be a matter of this person maybe not necessarily believing that time per se equals their value, but just being a bad negotiator.
Get better at negotiating.
And that's got to be demoralizing, I suspect. Elliot, do you have any experience with this? Or
I mean, I've never worked a job where there have been those kind of restrictions. I think that it's typically frowned upon to do so, but I've never worked anywhere where there's been a restriction in terms of discussing what you're paid or discussing how much you make. I think in for me, it's always been discouraged simply because people found it to be tactless or they found it to be a bit crude to go up and ask somebody how much do you make or how. But I've never worked anywhere where they told me that we were not allowed to discuss it at all.
I think there's probably a correlation between the people who are tactless and rude about asking about what you make and the people who aren't able to negotiate that well. I think there's probably a correlation there.
That's interesting. It'd be interesting to study. Now, I live in a bizarre world. I live in a nonprofit world where nonprofits have to disclose how much their budgets are, how much they spent, and also the salaries of the top 10 highest paid employees. So anyone can go online right now and see what my employer, what any of the nonprofits in the world pay their top 10 employees. And so in that regard, I think people should get in that world should be much better at negotiating than they are, shockingly.
Yeah, because they have more of an objective baseline. Anyway. They have the evidence there.
Yeah, you see exactly what the budget is, exactly how much was spent on employees. If you know the number of employees from the company, you can extrapolate an average. You see what the manager's being paid. You probably see what your manager's being paid, since they're probably in the top 10. And then you can negotiate accordingly. I think that would be great to have everywhere, but I don't mean to say it should be mandatory. But I don't know. I think we're a little too uptight about money. I understand the tactlessness thing, Elliot, but I don't find it tasteless per se.
Yeah, I was, that was my
curious
joke
about what I made.
It can be done in a tactful way. It can be done in a tasteful way.
And it's, and it can be done in a rational, useful way where I'm trying to talk to people in my industry about what they make so I can figure out what my value is in a market. Let's say I wanted to leave my job. Because I live in the nonprofit world, it would be strange for me. I wouldn't know exactly what my value is in the market. So, anyway.
All right.
Stop being prudes.
Well, money. I can tell you what you guys make for this show. It's nothing. So, that's what I make for this show as well.
Double that and I'll stay.
Yeah, double that and I'll stay. Yeah. We just have the Patreon money, which we're keeping for a worthwhile investment. Although, to be fair, I will probably pay myself back a little bit because I do pay the hosting and everything out of pocket every month. So I'll probably take some of that at the end.
How
of the
dare year. You? How dare you? You should have to eat that cost.
What did we learn this episode, this trip? Daniel?
Oh, man. Well, I learned that fantasy football, being commissioner, I get the power thing now. I mean, I have a little more sympathy with Goodell, actually.
Yeah, people made shitty picks, and they were like, I made a mistake, and then you undid their picks.
In two cases, the two cases they did it, it was absolutely a mistake in both cases. But
you wouldn't. My appeal wasn't heard.
I didn't know you were Michaels, by the way. I was trying to get a tier one running back. Could you undo everyone's pick so I could do that?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't think so. I didn't undo Michaels' picks. You may have noticed, even though he picked people who are not affiliated with any team and who will likely never play in the NFL in 2016.
Was he fucking around, or did he not know?
I don't know. I didn't get the exact story, but it was like, apparently like the mobile version of the site or something doesn't necessarily rank the players. They just do it alphabetically. And so like, he just chose the top one on the list. And so like A. McCoy was a tight end who apparently was like the fourth string tight end for Seattle last year.
There you got what he deserves.
He texted me, he's like, what the fuck? I'm the taco of this league.
All right, what did you learn, Elliot?
I learned that apparently some people think Hawaii is a continent.
The great continent of Hawaii. I mean, give it a couple million years, it could be, you know, fairly big, but it's not a continent level yet. Justin, what did you learn?
I learned that I am apparently more rational than I realized in things like talking to strangers and hating honest trailers. So I feel better about myself. Mm.
Well, good. We hope that this podcast helped you, the listeners, feel better about your collective selves as well.
You probably feel better about your chances at fantasy football this year.
We want to continue doing this. We want to keep making these episodes, and the only way that we're going to be able to do that is to grow the audience, grow our influence, grow our reach. And the number one way that we do that is if you, the listeners, turn more people like you onto the podcast. Yes, we need you to go out and proselytize. Be our fucking prophets. Prophets? No, who are the opposite of prophets?
Apostles?
Who are the disciples? Disciples.
Apostles. No, disciples.
Apostles. Apostle, disciple, apostle. We are disposals. Go forth into
apostles.
The world and proselytize. Apostle, tell of the great tales that we have accomplished here at the Midside. Tell
Talk about how big our dicks are.
That's right, and how we used them to whip social justice warriors in the face. And
yeah, I
want
to see that porn.
And you know, I would pay not to see that porn, but because that's the only way we really grow. So you can do that. Tell people, go to iTunes, subscribe to the podcast, search for The Midside, scroll past Night Vale, kick them in the nuts, and then leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. That helps immensely. You can also subscribe on Google Play. You can listen to us through Liberty.me. Love us some Liberty.me. They syndicate us through their podcast feed. That's awesome, which means we're also on Stitcher and SoundCloud and a few other places. So basically, there's no excuse for not listening to us. You can listen to us through your fucking car, through your Zune. You still have a Zune, through your Android device, your iPhone, whatever it is. You can find us, and your friends can find us. And then, of course, there's Patreon. James was here. He'd be worshiping in the altar of Patreon because it's the great site, patreon.com/themidside, where you can sign up to give actual money to us for every piece of content that we create. So every time we release one of these podcasts, you can give us $1, $2, a nickel, $300 million, whatever you want to do. We'll take it. What the hell just happened?
I'm telling you, Elliot's doing some weird shit.
I think Justin just farted into the microphone.
No, if I farted, it would have been a lot louder than that.
Uh-huh. So, yeah, thank you. Go to themidside.com/podcast, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat, The Midside. It's all there. Thanks. See you next time.
I'm Justin Hemlesneski, and I hope you learned something this trip. This concludes your journey into The Midside. Good luck out there, and remember, if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a day.